they become your friends. It's really silly.
But these are things that are just all around you.
All around, all the time. And people in the city say, well, what can you eat in the city? And granted, you do need to be careful about contamination and where things grow and environmental pollutants. But at the end of the day, when, like, you know, if the proverbial apocalypse comes, if and when, depends on who you talk to, you know, I could find food. Well, I'm good. I don't know about you, but I'm good.
On your door.
A lot of people have said that. I'm prepared. There'll be a line. So, but, you know, that's something I love teaching classes. Okay. You know, it is, I continue to push my own learning and understanding with teachers that are continue to learn themselves and continue to push their understanding with plants. And we have to rebuild these traditions. So it's something that I strongly believe that it, you know, plant medicine is the people's medicine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do lots of donation-based classes. I do consultations. I don't sell retail any of the remedies I make at home for 100 reasons. Except I do work one-on-one with people.
Okay.
And so that's probably the best way that, you know, if people are looking to learn more about natural remedies or foraging is just to come in contact with me directly.
Now, you also traveled to South America a few times to learn more about herbalism. What have you been able to learn there from the teachers there?
You know, I have learned so much. I think, one is it's amazing how people across the world retain their connection to the earth and how we have become so detached from the processes, whether it's raising our food, whether it's our medicine. We're just detached from it. And, you know, even I've had the blessings of being able to travel in several third world areas, and people still retain that connection of the earth. And where there might be extreme poverty, they can still make teas. They still have that traditional knowledge and skill set. They might not have access to some of the higher end conventional treatments for like chemo or some of those other things that we may have that could be useful, but they've also adopted and retained their own traditions for healing. And for me, that's really profound because we have access to so much, yet there's still such a disparity for, you know, access to health. And this is then becomes a healthcare conversation. It's a great thing to travel because you can really question where you're at in your community and what your community can do and learn and grow and become. So
now, what are some herbal cures for, you know, we are talking about the common cold and stuff like that, but for common ailments, folks may wish to give, you know, herbal treatments a shot.
Well, I think, you know, right now it's cold and flu season.
Yeah.
So I do a lot of my work. One, I don't treat, diagnose, or cure any illness or disease. But, you know, really resorting back to the basic kitchen herbalism strategies. Chicken soup. Chicken soup made from healthy chicken bones from the farmer's market. If if really good quality meat is really expensive, for reasons we can't really get into today, but if you want a really good remedy, those healthy chickens from the farmer's market make really good. You know, look up your grandmother's chicken soup recipe and have some of that on hand in the freezer. If you're really desperate, you can get it out of a can. I do really promote working with what you have. Because I do a lot of work with people of a variety of economic means. So some people cannot afford the beautiful organic chicken from Whole Foods, let's say, or the farmer's market. Chicken soup, mint teas. Mint teas are great. You know, first we need to remember some common sense basics about staying healthy. Good diet, a lot of sleep. We need to have a lot more sleep than we currently do in our society. And many people will laugh when I say reduce stress. But stress is definitely a silent killer. And if we're under stress, our bodies really take longer to heal. So whether that's a cold or a chronic illness, your stress, your sleep, and your diet can all come into play about staying well. So that's really first and foremost. You know, it's cliche, but really, really, really important because that will set the foundation to whether or not you can, because everybody gets sick, right?
Right. happens.
But it does. It happens. It's part of being human. And it's, but it will set the precedent of how fast your immune system can fight things off and recover.
Mm-hmm.
A chronic cold that lasts, 10 days and then turns into a secondary bacterial infection, one is a drag.
Mm-hmm.
Two, it's just really hard to rebuild your system to be able to fend off other things that might come along with just what starts out to be the common cold.
Sure, so sure.
Diet and rest. And mint tea. When in doubt, mint is a great one. And chamomile tea, those basic things, ginger, lemon, garlic, and onion.
Okay.
Those are things everybody should have in their pantry.
Well, that's good things to keep in mind for folks.
And easy. You can even get them at the liquor store if you needed to. Really. You could, you can get lemon if you have a cold.
Right.
And if all you can get to is the corner store up the street.
Make use of that.
And then you can make a hot toddy, but you should. The alcohol really is not the best part of the healing solution when you're sick.
I was hoping that was going to be your answer.
But, and honey too is another. So those are all really basic things that anybody can get really at any of the markets in town that they should have in their pantry as really great go-to kitchen
herbs.
Mint
is a super easy one to grow too.
Mint grows itself. There are all sorts of kinds of mints. I delight in teaching people how to use different kinds of mints, from catmint to spearmint to peppermint to some of the wild mints. But if you're traveling and on the road, the best thing that can be your blessing in the times of intestinal distress or stomach ache, or even you're feeling like that, the first signs of the ick, is that tea box that has even, the Twinings mint tea and chamomile tea. If that's all you got, I highly recommend it.
So what is it about mint that makes it so helpful to people?
Well, a couple of different things. Mint is wildly aromatic, so it's got volatile oils that help serve as antimicrobial effect. It helps open up the pores and helps open up and regulate the body's temperature. The word is diaphoretic. It can help you sweat.
Okay.
And it supports a fever response. The fever is not a disease. It's actually an immune response, your body's response to warding off any illness.
Okay.
And mint tea, really hot cup of mint tea. I'd add some other plants from my garden in there as well, but can really support that fever process.
But it's still a good idea if somebody isn't sick.
Mint tea's great.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Let's chill it. You can do lots of things with mint tea.
Okay. Okay.
Mint, you should add mint to your garden this year.
Good to know. Back to the urban farming. The Winchester does their own farm. Do you see that becoming more of a trend with local restaurants?
I think it's a challenge. It's challenging for a couple reasons, and Winchester has had some, difficulty in having their own garden and having it actually integrate with their menu at the right times and the right quantities and things like that. But it certainly is a trend and a hope, and I think a really good one. It just, I think restaurants, I think Paul from the Winchester would tell you that he's looking for someone who knows what they're doing to run that garden.
Sure.
To make it really work for them. But I think it's a great idea. I mean, there was some unused vacant land right across the street from the Winchester. And, I mean, who doesn't love to see that garden across the street there?
Very cool.
Even if it's just a tiny part of their story.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be so much more.
Right.
So there is a challenge there, but it's great. Yeah.
Now, do you foresee chain restaurants using urban farms in the future?
I think there are people and very smart business people who are trying to capitalize on a lot of the market conditions that can make farming in the city close to where so much of our population resides in so many restaurants and so many grocery stores a viable business model. So whether it's chain restaurants or chain grocery stores or things like that, like Bright Farms is Paul Lightfoot, who runs Bright Farms, is visionary, trying to stick large greenhouses on the top of big box grocery stores or near a really heavily populated restaurant, area or something like that, and grow the things that make sense to grow. Now they're talking about hydroponics and things like that. So I think that's the way it's going to work for chain restaurants. You're not going to see, I think, Fridays looking for a plot of land to grow their onions for their onion rings or something like that. I just don't see that happening. But I think there is, as energy costs go up, as people's concern with how much, you know, how far their food travels and whether or not they can even get nutritional benefit out of the food they eat if
right.
it's picked in Chile and
well,
shipped.
Even
you know,
if
like,
they're not growing it themselves, I mean, what would be the likelihood of having them come to Uptown Farm for some items that they would include on their menu?
Yeah, I think it depends on the chain. Some have much more, you know, autonomy when it comes
sure.
to sourcing their ingredients and things like that. And I don't think that's unrealistic. And I know of some urban farmers, one in particular in Kelowna, who we've learned a ton from, Kelowna, British Columbia, who has some more chain-type restaurants, not international global chains or anything mm-hmm. like that, but some chain-type restaurants who source all their greens from him.
Okay.
Because it's around the corner, and they're great, and he's competitive in price, and
mm-hmm.
it's picked the same day. You know, I mean, who wouldn't want that?
Right, right.
I think, you know, and also you see Trillium Haven, they own the farm, they own the restaurant,
mm-hmm.
they collaborate with other growers. That's a different, newer twist
yeah.
on the farm-to-table model. You know, but I love what Bartertown is doing
mm-hmm.
when I think of how they've actually changed their business model of restaurant ownership. Like, the employees own the restaurant, and that sets the tone for, you know, who they work with. They work, like, with the Uptown Farm. And it's also, you go in for a plate of food, and it's a reasonable price
mm-hmm.
for a plate of food versus, you know, farm to table has become pretty exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
And to go out to dinner to have a local meal and have it cost you $120, that's like, you know, your anniversary dinner, right?
Right.
I think the issue, you know, there are lots of issues that come up, and I think as consumers start to also ask, where is my food coming from? Is it local? Is it this? Is it that? You know, the business owner, to what Andy was alluding to, needs to find a way to make it financially viable, and so it's not, you know, a $40 plate of food. The market economics to
yeah.
all of it is really, really complex. But it's exciting. There's
yeah.
a lot of opportunity to rethink things.
Mm-hmm.
So where are we compared to other U.S. cities doing urban farming? I mean, what can we learn from them, and what can we teach others?
You know, I think comparatively, you know, up north, they've got a really strong network of local food advocates that include growers, restaurants, farms. I mean, it's, you have to look at it from a systems approach. You know, I think Grand Rapids has been slowly putting the components to a local food infrastructure over the past 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's bigger than just urban farming. It just doesn't include urban farms, but it includes the forward and backward linkages that
mm-hmm.
might be included to thinking about where our food comes from,
right.
right? From policy to access issues to production to supply chain to the economics to the eater to cooking
mm-hmm.
in your kitchen. You know, there are lots, of course, on the coasts, the Bay Area has a really strong local food
mm-hmm.
Infrastructure and a community that values
mm-hmm.
local food. I think we're on the up and up. We have a lot of potential. We have a really strong community that believes in food justice and food access. We have people moving into the area that want to start small farms and put local food, not just urban farms, but small farms are in the area that are in their 20s, 30s, 40s that actually want to make this a career, which
mm-hmm.
is significantly important as our older folk farmers retire.
Right.
And, you know, we see businesses popping up to fill that need of feeding people.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a role for more to what Andy had said, more urban farms to pop up. It's a matter of people seeing those as business opportunities. And then maybe you don't want to make it a living, and maybe you just want to feed your family.
Mm-hmm.
And we do need to do more co-sharing and co-learning and to unify. So to put us, you know, we're doing okay. I think we
mm-hmm.
can, we have a lot of assets.
Yeah.
I think we need to include the food justice and the access issue as part of the farm-to-table conversation, which we currently aren't doing,
mm-hmm.
Because good food just shouldn't be something that someone can afford, you know, $40 for a dinner.
Sure.
I do think that the old adage, necessity is the mother of invention, is pretty true. So in larger cities that do not have access to nearly the amount of farmland that we have very close, right, have been forced into exploring urban agriculture,
faster.
Rooftop gardening, all these sorts of things faster. Now, I do think there is an illusion that we don't need urban farming or urban growing or something like that here because we have so much farmland around. But it's amazing how much of it is actually tied up in corn and soybeans or feed or things like that, and don't end up on our plates. How much of our lettuce, you know, in Meijer comes from New Mexico or California all year long, even though we have, you know, amazing farmland around. And so I think to take it into our own hands as city dwellers, if we have, you know, land that's not being used, or, you know, have just the most amazing experience of picking some bok choy, throwing it in a you know, box and walking it three blocks to the Grove and knowing that somebody was going to have an amazing, you know, dinner because I grew some really nice red bok choy, you know, and I picked it today and walked it over there and someone's going to eat it this afternoon. It was like, I mean, there's something empowering about that. And we have the space and we have restaurants that want it. And along the way, we're exposing people and connecting them to the fact that taking care of the earth means that the earth will take care of us.
Sure.
You know, even in the city, like, you know, this small amount of land, if we don't muck it up too much,
right,
it could provide food, you know, for families or a job, meaningful employment or things like that. And there's room for it. And I think we're heading in the right direction. But I think there's a little education that needs to go on that this is possible, number one, and that it's needed, that we can dramatically reduce the amount of miles our food travels, the amount of nutrition that's into it, you know, whether it's for a restaurant at the market or for your own family, you know, and your own, you know, table. Grow some food.
Sure. So if folks want to get a hold of you guys, what's the best way?
I have a website, herbalistlisarosestarner.com, or Facebook me, Twitter me, Google me.
Okay.
It's that easy.
Yeah, our website is uptownfarm.com, and you can email me at andy@uptownfarm.com.
Perfect. This is Paul Jindrasiak for Sunday Morning Town Square, and I've been joined by Lisa Rose Starner of Burdick & Rose and Andy Drott from Uptown Farm. We've been chatting about urban farming and herbalism in Grand Rapids. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Very much, Paul.